Welcome back to Lions Collective, not at the NFL Combine this week. We are back home. Golden Pouncey will be joining us in a little bit here. Lots to recap, lots to talk about. David Montgomery was traded yesterday. Graham Glasgow was cut yesterday. And then we have a whole week of stuff from the NFL Combine. So we'll start. I'm your host, Jeff Iafredi, Crunch Time Sports, Justin Rogers, Detroit Football Network, and Will Birchfield, 97.1 The Ticket. And then, of course, Colton Pouncey from The Athletic, who will be joining us shortly. But how are you guys now being back home after the combine? You got the week already kind of heating up, and then we got free agency coming up. So it's busy during this time of year.
Will, have you recovered? I feel like so gassed this whole week. Like I can't shake it. I don't know. Like Indy just does that to you every year. At least I didn't come home sick. I think the one year the COVID ripped through there before COVID was a thing. So, you know, we're feeling healthy, but just a little tired still.
Yeah, I had the benefit of leaving on Thursday night. So I got home a couple of days before you guys and was able to recharge over the weekend. But, dude, I was just proud of myself for getting out of the Indiana Convention Center. That place is an absolute maze, bro. It's just escalators that lead to escalators and hallways that lead to sky bridges. It is insane. I feel like I'm still stuck in that vortex.
You could cover a mile in Indy without leaving a building. It's a very impressive town, and it's why I think like the combine should never move. Like it mm-hmm. just works there. Maybe Kansas City is the only other location that justifies more centrally located, but Indy is very prepped for it. Jeff, I don't know if you see it. Colton's here in the chat, so if you want to,
let's do it,
dude. Indy also has this going for it compared to maybe other Midwest cities. It's got to have the most bars and restaurants per square mile or per capita. Like maybe Nashville would rival it nationally, maybe like New Orleans, but oh my god, dude, you can't go a block without passing like four great spots to pop in and get a beer. So like for an event that's also part networking, it's just the ideal location.
Look, it is not New York City or Chicago. Like those are, you know, the kind of the gold standards, Los Angeles, like restaurants in the U.S. But like for what you would expect Indianapolis to be like, there's a ton of great restaurants. I feel like I find a new one every single year. I enjoy it. I started like thinking about it this week. I think I've spent more than 2 months of my life in Indy between all the combines, the joint practices, a few games here and there. Like, I don't know, man. Maybe I should just buy a race car at this point.
Not a bad thing.
Yeah.
Talking Indy boys?
Yeah. What are we doing? Yeah, we're just recapping how we're all feeling after a week down in Indy. Are you still picking the puke off your shoes? You were stepping over in the bars on
that
Thursday,
was not
right?
Me. That was not me. No, that was a funny story though. I was walking back from Harry Nizzi's, and I see my coworker Bruce Feldman, and he's like walking towards Harry Nizzi's, and I just pass like two different puddles of puke. I'm like, did this guy just like yak and then walk two steps forward, then yak again? So I told Bruce, I was like, hey man, watch out, there's some puke back there. And he goes, I was going to tell you the same thing. There's more puke up there where you're walking. I was like, this guy's just like one guy, I think, is terrorizing the sidewalks of Indy. But I'm doing better now. I was a little tired. I was, you know, doing the late night circuit. You know what it is, but feeling good, feeling rested, and ready to go. Sorry, I'm late.
I feel like someone was running a 40 while also puking.
Honestly, bro. He was trying to make the freaks list and just
No doubt.
Yeah. It feels like every year you go down there and you walk in the convention center, it feels like I toured Indianapolis just walking in that convention center. I feel like I touched every part of Indianapolis just through that freaking convention center. So I'm with you. I hope they never move it. 4.5 hours is great. And I'm selfish by saying that. I know everyone else and other medias have to take flights. I'm selfish keeping an Indy. We might as well just jump right into it. Things that kind of transpire at the combine every year, a lot of discussions. It's really the only time. I guess you'd say maybe you got the draft, but more so you're working, I guess, but Radio Row at the Super Bowl. But the combine's great because everyone's together. Everyone's talking, or at least some are talking. It feels like the Lions, they're just ghosts at night, some of those guys. But you see a lot of guys have discussions down there and something get done. Last year, Myles Garrett was being shopped until he wasn't. This year, it felt like there were some other conversations happening. And everywhere I went, I saw Jeremy Fowler. This guy is just, I don't know if he doesn't sleep. I don't know what happens with Jeremy Fowler. Shout out to him. He was everywhere all at once. And then bang, puts out there that Dave Montgomery wants out of Detroit. Then David went ahead and quote tweeted it, didn't deny it, but basically said, hey, Emo told you that, you know. So, hey, gets traded to the Houston Texans like a couple hours later. What's number one, your reaction to that? I know Brad and Dan, you guys got a chance to speak to them, both of them, and yeah, they didn't really have the answer I think people were looking for. It was still kind of open-ended. They're waiting on the player. They obviously want Dave Montgomery there. But your reaction to the trade, did the Lions get good enough value? And just DeMont leaving this football team, knuckles of the duo here.
I think sometimes part of the job is reading the tea leaves, right? And the longer you're around people in the organization, the more you kind of learn to cipher through the coded language. And I'm pretty sure here last week, you know, I said that Brad Holmes's answer on David Montgomery had me leaning more toward divorce, you know, kind of bring me back to where I thought it was at the end of the season. And am I surprised that it happened 3 days later? Yeah, probably. I mean, it's always kind of jarring when a guy's here for 3 years and then suddenly bang, he's not. But I want to start with this because the way I view this move, before we get into kind of the return packages, this is a culture move for me. And in a sense, not in the sense that like Dave Montgomery was toxic by any means, because he embodied what the Lions were about in terms of work ethic and all that, but it reached a point where he didn't want to really be here, and he didn't want to be here if the role was going to be what it was. And I think with Jahmyr Gibbs in the building, they couldn't guarantee that. And what we found with Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell going back to kind of day one with Matthew Stafford is, we're not going to hold you hostage. If you don't want to be here, if you're not all in, if you can't you know, have that 100% buy-in, we will do as best we can to do right by you. And I know Garofalo had the report that Montgomery's preferred destination was Houston. I can't confirm that, but look, there's like 48 Iowa State guys on that roster. Their entire receiving corps is from Iowa State. Their offensive coordinator actually went to Ohio State for his undergrad and started his coaching career at Iowa State. You know, who knows where, you know, paths may have crossed or things might have been said, but it wouldn't surprise me in the slightest if the Lions did what they could to facilitate not only David Montgomery's desire to be traded to somewhere he could be better used, but to maybe seek his input on a wish list. And just like the Stafford trade, I'll let you guys get into it, but I feel like they got better or maximum value to what that player could return from any team, let alone maybe a preferred destination.
Yeah. With Montgomery, you know, I saw Jeremy Fowler's tweet, and by the way, Jeff, it is hard to miss Jeremy Fowler walking around the streets of Indy. That dude's like 6'5". I did see Fowler's tweet, and I also saw Montgomery's response, and I kind of like stayed quiet on that one because, you know, talking to people in Indy, it was kind of an open secret that he was like on the market, like could be had for the right price. Now, I do think the Lions tried to smooth things over with him and probably tried to work that relationship, but it seems like it was at a point where, you know, they just wanted two different things. The Lions liked him better in that number two role, and Montgomery probably thought that he could be a lead back somewhere else and would have opportunities to do so, as we now know with him being in Houston now. But I did get a text after the trade from someone, and, you know, he said they met with the Lions, and basically the Lions were a little bit confused why he wanted out. But, you know, if they got the right deal to make it work, they would send him off and make him happy and try to facilitate that. And that's what ended up happening. And as far as the return, getting a fourth, a seventh, and maybe a rotational player that can help, at least a depth piece. We'll see what Juice Gross can do, but that's a way stronger return than I was expecting. And I think talking to some people around the league, seems like the Lions made out pretty well there. I think the initial reports were like maybe a fifth rounder. So to get a fourth plus, I think that's really good work by Brad Holmes and company up there in the front office for what it's going to be a 29-year-old, slightly disgruntled running back if he had stayed here, to get some value for a player that probably didn't want to be here, probably thought that he could have better opportunities elsewhere. To get that sort of value, I think is really strong work. So obviously, I think it hurts. It's okay to be a little like iffy about it as a fan. You watched him for 3 years, kind of help this offense grow and reach new heights in the backfield, and some great memories that you always have. I understand that part's hard, a fan favorite leaving town, but you know, sometimes these marriages aren't always meant to last and you got to move on when the time's up.
Yeah. I'll just say it would confuse me a little bit if the Lions were legitimately confused themselves as to why Demo wanted out. Like, if you look at the way his workload declined pretty significantly over the past three seasons, it would make sense that when he views himself as a 29-year-old in his prime running back, that he would want to play for a team that can feature him more. Like, just take the very surface level numbers. His first year, he was 10th in the NFL in carries per game, about 15 and a half. His second year, he was down to 23rd. That felt fine with Jahmyr Gibbs' emergence at about 13.2. And then last year, he was under 10 carries per game and was 37th in the NFL in that department. So if that was going to stay even close to the same, really shouldn't surprise anyone that David Montgomery, who does have an ego in a good way, would want to play for a team where he can be spotlighted. If you remember when he first came here to Detroit, one of the draws for him was the ability to showcase what he could do behind a good offensive line, but also with a team that he felt like was going to give him a chance to shine. He felt like he didn't have that in Chicago, that maybe in some ways they were selling him short, and he wanted to play for a team that was going to give him a chance to thrive. So I would question why the Lions were confused by that. Now, maybe they had gave him assurances that they wanted to expand his role again in 2026, and that's why there was a disconnect. But you look at the way they had sort of phased him out last year, not all that shocking that he wanted to play for a different team. I think Brad does deserve a lot of credit here for getting the return he did. When you look at some of the other returns for running backs of similar stature or at similar places in their careers as Montgomery over the past, I don't know, 3-4 years, most of them fall short and well short of what Brad Holmes got for Demo. Like, I was even looking into Brian Robinson today just as like a potential free agent fit, and came across the trade that he was a part of last year, going from Washington after 3 years and three pretty productive years to San Fran as a younger running back. And I think he only landed Washington a sixth round pick. And there are countless other examples of trade packages that really don't rival what Brad got in return for Demo. So it feels like they did a pretty good job of turning an you know, maybe an uncomfortable situation into possibly a net positive for the team. And I don't know, we can dive into the package here in a bit, but it is a bit sad to kind of reflect on the way that Demo's career ended here, especially when you think about his comments entering last season, when he referred to himself as like sort of the forgotten man in the Lions offense. And then it played out exactly that way in 2025. And by the end, I think it made sense for both parties, honestly, to part ways for him. Cause I agree with Justin, like, you couldn't risk having a player here next year who didn't want to be here or was disgruntled from the beginning of the year to the end. That's just not how the Lions have operated. And it probably made sense at that point to move on.
Let's consider the shelf life of a running back, right? And I think David's probably got extended a little bit, you know, being in that timeshare with Gibbs. It took a little bit off his legs, but the man turns 29 years old this year. And even if he kind of vibed with what Petsing was bringing to the table, I don't think he could, you know, in good conscience, risk another repeat of last year. And so, you know, I was just looking at some numbers. In his career before last season, he'd played 88 games and he'd had 11 with 10 or fewer carries. And I didn't, you know, dig into whether there was injury situations in those games, whatever. 11 in 88. He had 9 games with 10 or fewer carries last year. And, you know, Gibbs deserves to be your starter. I mean, he's a bona fide superstar. And so if he's starting and he's your 2-minute guy and he's your when you're trailing guy, like, you just open the door to all these situations where you're going to have those games where Montgomery's just not going to be the piece that maybe he was game planned to be. And even the Lions tried to game plan for him to get him extra this week. It just didn't always work out the way they wanted. Will, I did the same thing you did. I went and looked at kind of what other backs were bringing back in comp. And I think I did it before the trade. And it's kind of where I was kind of spitballing that I thought, 6th rounder was probably likely. 5th seemed right. Optimistic. Joe Mixon, I thought, was a really good comp. You know, I didn't know exactly what his contract was when he got traded to Houston, coincidentally, but he pulled a 7th, right? And then I think they had to give him a three-year deal on top of that that was more money than what they're inheriting for Montgomery, and maybe that's part of what raised his value. But the package is really good. I mean, they needed some extra juice in the mid-round. I think that'll give them some flexibility to move around the board, which Brad, we know, loves to do on day three. And look, I haven't dove into the tape of Juice Scruggs. We're busy right now, but you know, it's a dude that has started games at center. And, you know, that is very clearly a priority. I'm not going to tell you he's going to be the starting center, but as of today, he's in the mix, right? I mean, at the very least. And, you know, if they end up signing a better center, so be it, or drafting a guy that can play early, great. But, you know, you need depth on the interior. And the beautiful thing about a guy like that is he can play three spots, right? And so to have that kind of flexibility is never a bad, and experience is never a bad thing to have on a roster.
And just going back real quick, maybe confused is the wrong word to use. I'm sure the Lions know very well how this played out and maybe would have gone back and changed some things they could, knowing it was going to end like this. But yeah, I think there's, if anything, and I don't know if they tried to smooth things over to the extent that like we're kind of assuming they did, but if they did and he still wanted out, maybe that's where the confusion comes, because, you know, you just hired a new offensive coordinator. Right. You could preach that things are going to be different. And if after that he still didn't want to be here, I think it'd be probably fair to be a little confused, knowing that he's been such a big part of this offense for so many years. But just beyond that, like I did reach out to a league source just to kind of get his perspective on the trade value, because, you know, everyone's saying it's a good deal, but, you know, I feel like that's just kind of us talking. This is the quote I got. I'll read it. Thought it was a great trade by Detroit. Got more value than I expected and a player who can fill in for a role. When you're in a situation like they are with so many talented homegrown players who'll be paid at the top of their respective markets, finding ways to add role players outside of free agency in the draft is key. I didn't think they can get higher than something on day three. So again, the fact that they got a depth piece, and, you know, again, we'll see how I haven't watched much Juice Scruggs tape. I'm being honest. I'll probably dive into him in the next couple of days, but if he can be a serviceable number two center and a guy that can maybe chip in at guard and has that experience, I think that's a win. And then getting a fourth round pick and just an early-ish day three pick to be able to mix and match and move around, as Justin mentioned, I think that's key. Because as you're going through these mock draft simulators and you're saying, okay, there's a big drop off from pick 50 to pick 118, adding a second, fourth rounder gives you some flexibility to move up. I would still personally like to see the Lions maybe trade down from 17, pick up a third. That'd make a lot of sense. That would kind of complete and fill some holes there for a little bit. But that fourth rounder really helps you. And then you get a seventh rounder, yeah, I believe, for next year. I don't know if it's this year, but just a bit of a cherry on top there. So all that for a soon-to-be 29-year-old running back that probably didn't want to be here, that's pretty good value.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, a couple more worth noting. First of all, Holmes also traded DeAndre Swift in somewhat similar circumstances and got a fourth round pick in 2023 as well. And that's another one that stands out as sort of a cut above the other recent running back trade packages. Like Cam Akers was dealt at the deadline, so not in the offseason, but the deadline in 24, I believe. And he had had some really good seasons with the Rams, and maybe his production was tapering off a little bit. But I believe he only pulled back a sixth round pick and was packaged with a seventh in that deal. So, Dan, again, just to reiterating the strong job that Brad Holmes did here. I thought Demo kind of put it best in that like little recorded statement that he released yesterday, where at one point he said that time had run its course. Like he had come here and he had probably maximized his value and his ability in 2023 and 2024 and realized that he wasn't going to have the opportunity anymore. And so it was just time to move on. And I kind of like what he said in a separate written post that I think he released today, which was that, like, sometimes with growth comes a call forward. And I think he just realized he had in some ways outgrown his role on this team. And as much as he loved being in a duo with Jahmyr Gibbs, it really wasn't a duo anymore. And if the Lions couldn't assure him that that was going to change, then it made sense to move on. I want to Hit on Juice Scruggs myself here too. First of all, sweet freaking name. Like, talk about a guy who is supposed to play interior offensive line. Like, come on. In the same way that Tank Bigsby was built to be a downhill running back, Juice Scruggs was meant to play center in the NFL. And center, I emphasize, for a couple of reasons. One, I think, and again, I'm not going to claim to have watched a bunch of Juice Scruggs, but metrically anyways, he has graded out better in the NFL at center than at guard. And if you review sort of the book on him coming out of Penn State, where he was also a starter at center as a senior, most scouts assumed he would fit best as a center in the NFL based on his build, based on his frame, based on like his physical traits. They thought he would be exposed at guard, where he wouldn't be able to sort of hold edges as well as he would be at the center position. And it seems to me like the Texans never really put him in a great spot to succeed, especially in 23 and then again in 25 when they played him mostly at guard. But he was serviceable for them. He was solid for them in 2024. Again, metrically, when he started 13 games at center, all 13 games for that year in which he was healthy, including their playoff win in the wild card round. And that year, by PFF anyways, he was like 15th out of 30 qualified centers who had played 50% of their team's offensive snaps. And if you just contrast that with Graham Glasgow last year, who was 29th out of 32 centers, you get a sense for how the Lions might be establishing a higher floor at the position. Now, it doesn't preclude them from potentially signing someone like, you know, a Cade Mays or a Connor McGovern, or drafting, you know, a day two or day three center this year. But I think that Juice Scruggs does give them a more stable outlook at center than they had yesterday. And I think that matters. And like, the draft capital is important here too, but so is the fact that they might've found a player who can fill a pretty clear need for them. And you hope that in a different system with a pretty well-renowned offensive line coach and Hank Fraley, who was an interior offensive lineman himself, they can help Scruggs kind of maximize the value that he showed in 2024.
I know people want to kill him for his PFF grade, and that's fine. That's what we have to talk about. But what is going on with the Texans and offensive linemen? They've dealt five of them in like the last 2 years. They dealt Tunsil, which, whatever, you're capitalizing value there. They dealt another, I believe, second rounder in Kenyon Green to the Eagles last year. Cam Robinson, they dealt. They dealt the tackle,
Titus Howard.
Howard to Cleveland the same day, like.
Which Cleveland, by the way, did not have a lot of offensive linemen before that trade.
I don't think they had any offensive linemen before that trade.
I was going to say.
Maybe they're just terrible at developing offensive linemen. I don't know. Just throwing out there. I did have this thought, though, because, you know, was part of the conversation early. Like, why did you extend David Montgomery if you're trading him before he sees that extension? And, you know, whatever. Things change in the NFL quickly, but if I framed it to you this way, the lost money for the Lions in this deal was a $3 million signing bonus, or $3.25 or something. Would you pay $3.25 for, you know, a backup offensive lineman and two draft picks? It suddenly doesn't feel as bad when you kind of look at it that way, as, you know, it's an old, I don't think anybody's doing it anymore, but we've seen draft picks traded for cash before. I think before the NFL outlawed it. This kind of in some way feels like that.
Yeah, it's a good way to frame it. The other point I wanted to make about Scruggs and why it matters that he has played center before, and this is part of the Tate Ratledge conversation, is that if you look at the good centers in the NFL, the guys who are playing at a solid to elite level, almost every single one of them played, guess what position in college? Center. Like, there's probably two guys in the NFL. Like, I spent a lot of time looking into this. I was curious as to how feasible it is for Ratledge to play center in the NFL and play it well, having never played it before. There are two guys, as far as I can tell, in the NFL right now who are playing center well and who didn't play it in college. It's Aaron Brewer with the Dolphins, who, by the way, wasn't a good center in the NFL until like year four of his career. And then Cooper Beebe, I believe, of the Cowboys, who transitioned right away and was a great pick. I think a second rounder for Dallas, and stepped in there and has given them good center reps. So it can be done. It is just highly unlikely. And it's part of the reason why I just don't think it's in the Lions' best interests or Tate Ratledge's best interests to move Ratledge to center next season. It just doesn't happen with any sort of regularity versus Juice Scruggs, who played it in college, played it well, and as far as I can tell, played it well enough in the NFL just 2 years ago.
Good research, Will. Never bank on the exception.
No. Well, it'll be nice, though, to have that center room, Juice Scruggs and Jake Slaughter. So just wait for that. You got another cool name getting in the building.
Jake Slaughter's 45 years old.
Yeah.
and looks eerily like Ben Raven. I can't shake it.
Someone said a mix between Ben Raven and Dan Campbell.
Yeah. Which, by the way, that's a specimen. I mean, that's a thoroughbred right there.
Yeah, that dude eats nails for breakfast. Yeah. That guy's a badass. He could probably pound like 20 Colonel Loggers. We'll get into it. At least just to kind of hit on the center position, you guys did a great job talking about Juice, and you mentioned Graham in there. But I think the people's where their mind goes is to next week. You free up, I believe, $5.5 million with the Graham cut release, and then you know. They're expected to maybe restructure Goff's deal. Hasn't happened yet, which I mean, you guys can provide some insight to that. What's a fair expectation for next week? I think you go into this free agency with Juice and, you know, Sam McLaughlin, the UDFA, I believe he was, that they signed, they brought in, but they don't have a lot at center. What's a fair expectation kind of heading into free agency here? It seems like you almost have to kind of go and grab somebody. Or not. Maybe they like Juice and they bring in a rookie, but they kind of, and I believe Brad talked about that, or maybe it was Dan, just the center position. And I forgot who asked the question, but a rookie coming in at center and how difficult that is sometimes for, you know, a rookie to just to start right. That was you. Okay. Want to make sure I knew it was someone here. How hard it is to step in as a rookie and play center. But what's a fair expectation for next week, fellas? It's obviously not going to be Tyler Linderbaum. I don't think that's going to be an option here, $20 million, but. Is it safe to say they got to go sign somebody to come in and play center?
Yeah, right now they're still $3-4 million over the cap, depending on, you know, the estimates that you look at. So at some point they're going to have to restructure some deals, whether it's just Goff or some combination of Sewell or St. Brown to free up extra spending money. But we talked about it a little bit last week. You know, Holmes kind of planted the seed. I think, you know, one of the other writers, might have been Colton, said kind of was soft launching or soft testing an idea about splurging in free agency. And I don't think anybody, writer or fan, is going to be resistant to being a little bit more aggressive on the open market. But there's so many different directions they can go. And really it starts with how many of your own guys are you going to bring back? Right. And that's something that the Lions have done a whole lot of during this current leadership tenure. But when you have the step back finally after step forward, you start to maybe reevaluate everything. But they've got two linebackers under contract. They're a little light on cornerback. Obviously, safety is a concern. So, you know, how many of those Amik Robertsons or Malcolm Rodriguez or Alex Anzalone, Rocky Sin, how many of those guys first are you going to, you know, kind of plug into your depth chart before you start spending? And then you look at where, you know, where you can find help from the outside options.
Yeah, I agree with you, Justin. I think you got to start with your own. Like, who are you bringing back? Who are you prioritizing? Do you want Amik Robertson back in that nickel role, or do you want to try to get a different type of body type there? Do you want Alex Anzalone back as your will linebacker, or do you think you can get maybe faster and younger at that position? And what's the price going to be? So I think you got to ask those questions first when you're talking about free agency, but they can go a lot of different directions. And I think they have to make some moves here to free up some money first, but I think they'll have some options. I haven't done a full deep dive into free agency yet, but I do think on the surface, for reasons Will mentioned, they got to really go out and get a veteran center. It just feels like too important of a position to roll the dice with a young player like Tate Ratledge that has never played the position. After we just saw the ups and downs of Graham Glasgow last year and not having a certain guy there, you need to go get a proven guy. I think that's just where I'm at. My only real like strong opinion of free agency this so far, go out and get a proven guy. And I think they'll have some names. It feels like a different center is getting released every day now. Nowadays, yeah. Now, obviously, the Bears are jumping in that center market after Dalman retired. But I don't see them going for Linderbaum. But if they can find a way to make some work with Connor McGovern, Cade Mays, I don't know if they're going to like him, but I think he could be an option. Tyler Biadasz, I think I'm saying that right, Biadasz. The Bears are apparently in on him, so you might have some competition. Lloyd Cushenberry, I think, just got released. Mm-hmm. So, obviously some of those names are better than others, but I just think having a proven veteran there, even if you do want Tate to at least be in the conversation and say, what just battle it out, I wouldn't hate that as long as you have just a guy that's done it before next to him as insurance. So, if you want to go in the higher end, like a Connor McGovern type, or if you want to get a lower end and try to battle out with Tate, that would make some sense. But I don't think Tate can be the guy. I'm fully with you there, Birchie. He's never played the position. I'm not sure if he wants to play the position. So I would just leave him at right guard.
He does not.
I would just leave him there at right guard. Yeah. Let him cook. I think he had I think he had a really, really solid year. I actually reached out to Dane Brugler at The Athletic, our draft expert. I was curious to get his thoughts on Tate's rookie year. And this is what he had to say. He said, how many second round rookies led their offense in snaps played? Ratledge was always going to be a high floor run blocker that played out like expected. Expected. There were some ugly moments in pass pro, especially early in the year, but he adjusted and the losses started to become more uncommon over the fourth quarter of the season. The Lions can feel good about right guard moving forward because of Tate Ratledge. So I agree with that. Leave him at right guard.
Let him play right guard.
Let him cook. Let him develop, man. Like I would really love that. So yeah. We'll see what they do, but that would be an easy way to just say, okay, we got our mainstay at right guard. Let's go figure out the center position in free agency. And, maybe they have Miles Frazier and Christian Mahogany kind of battle it out at left guard, or, see if there's a vet you can bring in to push them. That's kind of what I would do with the offensive line, but still up in the air, up for debate.
Yeah. I want to rewind briefly to Glasgow. Just obviously he was the cap casualty yesterday. It wasn't a surprise, a move we all saw coming. I just think Glasgow took a little bit of an unfair beating, or maybe received some undue flack from segments of the fan base over the past two seasons. I know his play wasn't up to snuff. I just want to say for Graham, when he signed that deal in 2023 with the Lions, it was under the impression that he was going to play right guard. He had played really well at right guard for them in 2023. He was part of that elite offensive line that took the Lions all the way to the NFC title game. And he re-signed with them, expecting to play right guard. Just to bring you behind the scenes here a little bit, Dan Campbell did call him like the day before free agency and said, hey, there's a chance that we'd want you to play left guard if you sign. Are you open to that? And Graham was like, I don't know. Let me talk to my agent. So we talked to his agent. And then he called Dan back and was like, are you just saying that knowing you're going to move me to left guard, or is there just a small chance it might happen? And Dan was like, well, we don't really know. We're trying to sort out what's going to happen with Jonah Jackson, but it's a possibility. And so Graham followed his heart, listened to his gut, and signed that deal, expecting that he would just end up playing right guard eventually at some point in the contract, even if not in 2024. But as things unfolded and the Lions lost Jonah to the Rams, and then the Kevin Zeitler signing happened late, Dan calls Graham again. He's like, hey, we want to sign Kevin Zeitler, but you'd have to move to left guard. And Graham was like, well, you did tell me it was a possibility. So he made that move with grace. And he made it because Zeitler had played virtually every single snap of his career at right guard. And he knew it made the Lions better if he moved to left. And look, he didn't play great in 2024. He also was battling some injuries down the stretch. And then 2025, he's like, all right, I'm going to get a chance to play right guard again. This is going to be all good. I can get back to myself. Frank retires. He has to move to center. Doesn't play well there. His body kind of betrays him again. And I just say that to point out that, like, this guy signed a deal under the assumption he'd be playing right guard and literally didn't take a snap at right guard for the rest of the deal. And I think that's why, we saw kind of the deterioration of his play in Graham Glasgow as we knew him. Just wanted to kind of put that out there. I think that we still shouldn't rule out the Lions trading for a center. I know we're focusing here on free agents, and I agree, like, McGovern makes some sense. I still think he's a little pricey when you think about the Lions budgeting for this offseason. He's probably going to command like a 3-year, maybe $45 million deal. Like, he's in that range. Cade Mays might make more sense for that reason. Maybe he's more in like the 3 years to $30 million range. That dude is huge. He's like 6'6", 330, would like almost dwarf Frank Ragnow, but he's definitely intriguing. I think he and McGovern both had really, really strong pass blocking numbers last season. I think McGovern allowed no sacks and like one QB hit all year, and Mays allowed one sack and maybe three QB hits all year. And that's essentially when you're talking about the interior pass protection for Jared Goff. That's what blows up pass plays for the Lions, maybe even more than pressure off the edges. So I think that Mays does make some sense. It sounds like the Lions have done a good bit of homework on him. I know I've thrown out the trade ideas here before, Brewer and Froholt. This one is crazy, and I don't think it has much potential, but I'm just going to throw it against the wall for shits and gigs here. Jake Brendel is entering the last year of his deal with the 49ers, and they did have a young center play pretty well for them last year when Brendel got hurt. I think his name is Matt Hennessy. He stepped in for like a 4 or 5 game stint and played well enough to the point that I wonder if the Niners would think about moving on from Brendel and sort of a proactive move and getting some draft capital back. I doubt they'd like the idea of helping like a direct NFC foe fill one of their needs, but I'm just going to toss that name out there. Like Jay Raj did with that defensive assistant candidate from,
we tried.
I'm doing a little aura farming here. So, maybe that's a name to watch, throw it in the center hat.
I like it.
What's crazy to me about the Graham thing too, is what people forget is he suffered a broken leg that required rods and screws and plates, and it just so happens to be the leg you need to anchor on playing on the left side of the line. Mm-hmm. And just like he never had the flexibility to play at that level on that side. And so it was probably not the best personnel decision from the Lions perspective. I understand why you want to bring in Kevin Zeitler, awesome player. And you think that maybe if you look at it like the five fingers of a fist, like that's still a pretty strong finger, even if maybe he can't anchor the way he would, but clearly you didn't get the best value out of Graham moving him. So I kind of, as we were talking here, I was going through like the positions and in free agency, and I'm thinking like, where are you looking for a multi-year guy? And really,
yeah,
it's like center or bust.
Yeah.
It feels like, because like, you're not going to be in the edge market. You're not going to be paying probably the Boye Mafes of the world, $15 million a year. It's a little excessive. Linebacker, you've got two starters. You're probably not going to be paying a third, some kind of large money, some sum of money. Running back, draft probably is a better answer. Maybe you can find a stopgap solution to be that complement to Gibbs. And you're not paying a tackle, the heir to Decker, right? You're not paying somebody $15, $20, $30 million. So like center makes the most sense on the multi-year front. I think you could patchwork a lot of these positions, but the draft is really going to be the solution. I do like Mays. I do like Biadasz. You know, I like the fact that they're bigger bodied centers, and I think that's kind of appeals to what Lions like to do. Wasn't a guy that was on my radar going into the combine, but Jagger Burton caught my attention when he said he met with the Lions and then goes out. And I think he was the most athletic center at the combine, right? I mean, highest RAS, like something like 9.9 something. And dude's a big bodied center. The Lions are kicking the tires on that. Like, I think they've got a type there. They don't want the 290 pound athletic guy. So sorry, Seth McLaughlin. Like that's probably where you're not fitting in this picture, as much as, you know, fans are excited about a Remington winner on the roster. I will say I think I'm, you know, been on the bandwagon all along that Ratledge at center is not the right idea for all the reasons discussed. But if the Lions can get Venga Ioane, get on there and start snapping that ball, because that is something I think could be a really interesting, like that's a mean group. And then what I like about that is you move Mahogany back to the right side where he actually played primarily in college. You plug Ioane in at left guard, and suddenly you've just got this really young, big framed, athletic, nasty group on the interior. And I don't know, I could be sold on that for sure.
I got my combine notes coming out tomorrow, but I did have a full blurb on how awesome Vanga is in that section. Now I would definitely move around the offensive line for him. So I'm glad we're in alignment there. He's such a dude, man. Like, I mean, Justin, we were listening to him talk at the combine, and he's just so confident, so like self-assured. I like, for a young player like that. And you turn on the tape and you watch him. He's a mauler. He's actually pretty athletic for his size. He can get it all done in the run game. I think he's the best guard in the class. You can argue maybe if you move a tackle to guard, he might be a better player. But I think he's the best, like, pound-for-pound guard in this draft. And you can plug him in at left guard. And, you know, even if you leave Tate at right guard, I think you can still get a veteran center and then put Vanga at left guard. And then all of a sudden your interior is set for the next few years. So that's another option I would do rather than moving Tate to center. But I do understand the appeal of doing that in this scenario. But man, they got some options, and I'm curious to see how it all plays out, because that offensive line is really important, obviously.
Dude, yeah. It feels like a lazy comp. I admit, Polynesian to Polynesian, but man, all I could do was hear that silent killer, confident projection of Penei Sewell when talking to Vanga. Mm-hmm. Like, that just resonated with me, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this line would be so mean. And I mean, who doesn't love a mean offensive line?
Yeah. The Lions should just have five Polynesians up front. Yeah. Just go for it. Yeah. And just wipe teams out.
It's winning football. Yeah.
Hell yeah. No, I found myself facing the same dilemma too, J-Rodge, when I was sitting down to think about potential free agent fits. It really, the only position where a long-term investment makes sense is center. I guess, like, potentially maybe Kirby, if they really don't believe in his viability beyond right now, and maybe they'll end up telling us that if they make a move at center. I still don't think that's highly likely. Like, obviously edge is a need, but yeah, they're not in the Jalen Phillips market. They're not in the Oway market. Like, I don't even think they would be in like the 1 year Khalil Mack market, because he's probably still like a $15 to $16 million player based on the steady production. I do think there are
don't
some
care.
One
I want it.
I could be talked to.
I said, I don't care. I want.
That'd be sick.
Yeah. I love Mac.
Yeah. I think there are some 1 year edge guys that make sense, a little more sense financially than even like Khalil Mack. I'm going to bring up Jadeveon Clowney. And I know a lot of Lions fans have kind of clamored for him over the past couple of years. He has played for like six teams in the past seven seasons, so he's no stranger to switching schemes, which would suggest he's obviously like scheme proof. And the production is still there, dude. Like, 8.5 sacks in only 13 games last year. And I know he had some shoulder and hamstring injuries that would give you pause. But like, if you let Muhammad walk in free agency, and I tend to think they will, you could get the pass rush juice in Clowney, who still has some like ruggedness and size against the run that Muhammad doesn't have. You know, he's got the 6'5 frame, 260. And if you look at the pass rush win rate last year, he was 14th. In the NFL, Muhammad, for comparison, was 24th. So, you know, I think that's a guy that might end up costing a similar amount per year as Muhammad, who you could probably get on like a 1 year, $10 million, $12 million deal.
Maybe
which
less.
Might make some sense. You think even less? Yeah. So, I think that's one that's worth looking into. I think he has the physical traits that might suit what the Lions are seeking opposite Hutch, especially if you feel like you're gonna draft someone like Keldrick Falk, who I think we all agree would take some time to develop as a pass rusher in the NFL. Well, now he's got a year to kind of find his feet.
Sorry, you're getting AJ Epinesa, and you're going to love it. All 3.5 sacks in 16 games is going to give you.
Cam Jordan, I don't know. That's another one that I feel like pops a little bit. Obviously, the connection to Dan Campbell put up big sack numbers last year. I don't know if like he graded out as well as the sack numbers would indicate, but maybe a name worth watching. 1 year deal kind of guy.
I believe he had his best pressure rate since 2020 and his highest sack total since 2021. So he's still getting it done. I guess my only question would be like, does he want to leave New Orleans? Is he a career guy there? But if he's open to leaving, like, I give him a call in an instant.
He'd be a fun guy to talk to as well for you guys. Absolutely. He's a character, dude.
Oh, and I'm sure he and Dan like have a great thing. I can see those guys hitting it off those few years in New Orleans.
Yeah. What I'm learning is Kellen Moore gets the best out of guys.
Sounds like it. Yeah, defensive coordinator Kellen Moore.
I guess to kind of close out the show here, any things from last week, just speaking to players, talking to Dan and Brad, just getting a chance to watch the players work out. Anything stand out to you or any takeaways that you have now that we are removed from the combine?
Every year I walk into this thing, I'm like, don't get caught up in the numbers. Don't get caught up in the numbers. And then like 75 guys jump out the building at Lucas Oil. Like the athletic testing numbers, I know like they prep for it, but it's still like these guys are jumping 43 inches on their verts and setting records for their position in the 40. And I'm just like, I want that guy and that guy and that guy. I think the position I walked away feeling like the Lions could get somebody on day three. I like the tight end group a lot.
Yeah.
I got the sense more so than maybe past years that there's a little bit better emphasis on blocking with some of these guys. They like doing it or they had to do it and found a passion for it. And, you know, whether that's Klein from Michigan or Will's favorite, what? I already forgot.
Borkature, baby.
Borkature. Yeah, I know. I talked to him. He has no neck.
Yeah, like, it was me, you, and like two other people.
Just like a mean, nasty Texas son of a bitch, right? Like, yeah. Perfect. But like, I think, you know, whether it's a long-term replacement for Brock Wright or and that number three spot now, like they can find a tight end in this draft, and probably the same thing with a running back too.
I got a take, fellas.
Oh, love yeah. it. Fire Let's go. Away.
I think the prospects coming out are soft. Not Ooh. Particularly this year, but I think watching the combine, you see, oh, this is the most athletic group in NFL history. Blah, blah, blah. They're running this, they're running that. You got guys that are like afraid of their numbers that aren't testing, and only the fast guys are testing. So, of course, the numbers are going to be a little juiced. I think that's soft. I wish guys wanted to compete. Even if they knew they weren't going to run a fast 40, if it's a safety, it's going to run like a 4.5. I wish he would still run. You know, like I want that. I want guys to compete. I want guys to go out there and do every drill and actually like show what they can do to these NFL teams. And you got guys that are cherry picking their numbers. And even the guys that are running, the guys that are fast and quick, they're not even doing all the agility drills. So I'm just like, all the numbers are a bit skewed this year, and I hate it. Like, I think it's soft. I think it's weak. So that's my take.
I like that take. Where have all the Detroit Lions gone?
Yeah, man. I mean, there's still a few. I mean, yeah. I think Emmanuel McNeil Warren, like, he's a safety. I don't think he's the fastest guy, but I think he still ran in the 4.5s. Like, normally, a guy that's a projected first-round pick or a top 30 prospect that runs in the 4.5s isn't running just to kind of – you know, oh, I'm going to do it my pro day when I can like have a little more time to train. Like normally that's the case. He was out there competing. So I did appreciate that. There are some guys that you can kind of get a sense of, but that's my take on prospects. In terms of potential fits for the Lions, Blake Miller, going to his podium session on Saturday, I kind of walked away. I'm pretty sure most of us did, walking away from there being like, that's a Lion if I've ever heard one. This thing is going to check a lot of boxes. 6'6", 34-inch arms, 9.97 RAS. I think it's sixth highest for offensive tackles. It was a four-year start at Clemson. I think he started all 56 games and set a school record for most snaps in school history. Was a wrestler back in the day. High character guy, viewed as an excellent teammate. And then he told a story about like a wrist injury he suffered, I think this going into his junior year at Clemson. And it was like spring football, and he like hurt his wrist, and he originally just had like, you know, soft cast on it and continued to practice with like this like wrist injury. I think it was right before spring break, he had to get surgery and he missed a day, a single practice. And he goes, yeah, that kind of sucked. Missing one practice so with the wrist. He's like, yeah, I mean, that kind of sucked, but I was able to come back with a club on it and just kind of play through because I wanted to be there for my guys. As he's talking, he's like straight face, like not laughing. I'm like trying so hard not to laugh. I'm just like, that guy's a Lion and he doesn't even know it. So we'll see if he ends up being the pick. His range is kind of a little bit scattered. I've seen him as high as like top 20, and I've seen him kind of in, I guess, the early second round. So let's say 20 to 40-ish range. I'm not sure he's going to make it to 50 at this rate he's going, especially after the combine with, you know, the just kind of lighting up the athletic testing. I think he'll probably be pushed a little higher there. So I do like him as an option. Obviously, Taylor Decker coming back kind of, you know, alleviates some of the concern for tackle. But if you still want to go that, like, you know, draft and stash route, I think he would make a lot of sense for them. I think I'm out on Caden Proctor for some reasons I heard at the combine, which I will not share. But I'm just not sure he's going to check. all the character boxes for the Lions. And I also had concerns anyway that I feel like he's better suited as a guard. And yeah. I know there's some positional versatility that some teams like that, being able to play tackling and guard. But if I'm taking a guard, I'd rather take Benga. So that's my other thing. And then another guy, Maxi Honitor. I think I'm saying his name right, finally.
Let's go. We got it.
It only took like a month. But I still like him as a tackle. I'm just running through my list of tackles right now. But I really think he's going to be a good player and like another draft and stash option. I actually think he's going to be pushed a little higher too with some of these run-on tackles I think we're going to see in the first round. But there's some tackles I really liked, some I didn't. And I really like – I'm glad I stayed till Saturday to kind of hear those guys talk and – some good, sure. good sessions there for sure.
My takeaway also at the tackle position is that Monroe Freeling seems to be flying up draft boards and possibly even into the top 10 overall. Colton, I know you had mentioned his name here, maybe even last week, or I think it was 2 weeks ago. And he was someone that I went down there thinking the Lions could either grab at 17 or possibly even trade back in the first round and still grab like in the 20s, pick up an extra day two pick. Dude, no longer does that seem viable. Like he runs a sub 540, which apparently he wasn't even happy about, even though he's an absolute monster. And then he has like an unofficial 9.99 RAS score, which ranks second out of what, like the 1500 tackles in the RAS era. I know he didn't play a ton at Georgia, and so there are you know, maybe limited experience, but you know, I felt like early in the draft process that the conversation about tackles was Maui Goa and Fano clear cut top two, and then like a group of guys who were in the conversation for offensive tackle three. It feels like that's becoming pretty clearly Freeland, and maybe he would even jump into that top two conversation. So that was a guy who seemed like a viable Lions target and might not anymore. I still think there's good tackle depth, as Colton just underlined. But yeah, I left the combine realizing that Freeland probably not a realistic fit anymore for the Lions, barring a move up the board. The other thing, like combine-wise or draft-wise, I think we should mention, just to maybe finish the Montgomery conversation, is like the Lions can find a David Montgomery caliber player with the pick they got from the Houston from the Texans. Like last year in the draft, I looked today, there were 19 running backs taken on day three, which was the most of any position. That's just where teams are most comfortable now drafting that position. And like there were a handful of guys last year as rookies and day three picks who produced similar numbers to Montgomery, not just last year, but if you take Montgomery on aggregate from 2024 to 2025, which probably best represents what the Lions are looking for out of RB2 moving forward, like there were guys that put up numbers that matched his. Like, first of all, dude, Cam Scataboo would have been the ultimate freaking Lion. It's too bad he wasn't coming out of the draft this year, because he is exactly what they would have been seeking. He put up numbers per game that would have rivaled Demo's. Kyle Manungai in the seventh round for the Bears put up those kind of numbers. Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt in the seventh round put up those kind of numbers. Even the team that Demo's going to, the Texans, drafted Woody Marks in the fourth round. And like the efficiency wasn't quite as good last year for him as a rookie, but the volume was on par with what Montgomery did. So I think there are running backs in on day three this year who could give the Lions what they're seeking as the Jahmyr Gibbs compliment. I think Le'Veon Moss is interesting. It's a Texas A&M guy. I'm really just jonesing for Campbell to get a Texas A&M guy in the building with him. But like guys that fit that sort of like bruising, heavy finishing style that Demo had, there are a bunch of them that will probably come off the board on day three. And I think the Lions can find a pretty serviceable replacement for Demo if they don't go to the free agent market to do that.
And that's probably one aspect of Montgomery we didn't talk about. Like, it was untenable to pay him an $8 million cap hit for what amounts to probably 10 touches, right? Mm. Now you're going to get that for 1/8 of the cost if you draft a rookie, and you're going to lock that up for 4 years at 1/8 of the cost. And, you know, that's just the more logical way to build out your roster. But I think, Colton, we're in agreement. Just trade down a few spots, pick up a third rounder, draft Blake Miller, call today.
I think so. I'm cool with that.
Nailed it.
That, and that ends 2026 draft coverage.
Yeah. Hey, I got to mention too, just to just throw this out there. I know I put him, kind of brought him up earlier, but I'm so infatuated with Jake Slaughter, man. I can't get it out of my head. I liked him going to the combine, but he might look like a chemistry teacher, but the guy is, he's a massive human being, obviously. But you mentioned the Raz stuff, which the Lions, of course, factor in to some extent. He ranked seven out of 679 centers from 1987. I mean, the guy tested off the charts athletically. And to what Colton was saying earlier, he was one of the few centers to participate.
There's Campbell.
He was one of the few to participate. Oh, yeah, look at him. Yeah, I mean, look at this guy. I mean, he looks like a chemistry teacher, but the guy can play ball, man. And it seems like he is the closest Frank Ragnow. I'm not saying he's going to be Frank Ragnow, but he just gives Frank Ragnow vibes. He fishes. He loves football. He's 6'5". He's a very good pass blocker, run blocker, and he's someone that I think is just going to anchor someone's offense for a decade plus, hopefully longer than Frank Ragnow, but still, he's a stud, man. And I know the center class, like, going into it, it's like, oh, you got Logan Jones, you got Jake Slaughter, you got, Pat Coogan. There's like a couple guys, but he's probably going to be a second round pick. But I know the Lions only have the second round pick as of right now. Man, if they can get another pick in that area, Jake Slaughter, I have a take, on names. If you got a cool name, your chance of becoming a superstar in the NFL increased.
Yeah, I like that take.
It's just like Jake Slaughter. There's no way with that name you're not a great center. It's just there's some things that just line up perfectly. So I was a big fan of his, but leaving, I'm like, this guy, he sounds like he's 35 years old. And he just fits. He's intelligent, team captain, and he just loves the nasty part of the game, which I think the Lions definitely appreciate. But
yeah,
I'm excited about the offensive line class, man.
Slaughter train too.
Let's go, Will. He's a stud. He really is.
No, I think it's kind of fitting that he looks like he could be a chemistry teacher, because you ask about him, you read about him, you listen to him, and people say like he just understands the game at a higher level than most college centers. And I think that would bode well for his ability to step in and potentially play on day one. I think it was Daniel Jeremiah was talking about potential plug and play centers in the draft. And he's like, look, there's not many, but Slaughter was one he mentioned. And then Sam Hecht from Kansas State was another one he mentioned. So those two guys are worth watching. Speaking of things that they just line up, Colton, I think it was you who asked Freeling about his relationship with Tate. And it turns out they're boys. Like Freeling's going to Tate's wedding this offseason. Obviously they played at Georgia together. So, the idea of them potentially playing side by side, is far-fetched. I know we just laid that out, but, man, that would look pretty sweet here in Detroit.
Yeah. Tate actually hosted, Freeling on his, recruiting visit to Georgia.
That's right.
Years ago. So those guys have been boys for a long time. I think he said after the combine, so Tate must be getting married in the next like week or two, or maybe sooner than that. He said after the combine, going to Tate's wedding. But yeah, I think it is maybe starting to be a pipe dream. Nick Baumgartner texted me like right after the offensive lineman started running, and he goes, so all that tackle smoke was right. Freeling isn't getting on the top 15. And he also said, I bet Max doesn't get out of the top 30 after those 40s. So tough, but hey, you never know. You never know.
We can bring in Oscar Delp, Georgia tight end, who is also Tate's boy. If he needs one of his old homies from Athens, we'll bring in Delp.
Boys.
Dude, Delp was giving him shit for cutting the mullet. He's like, come on, man, you can't see the mullet as a rookie. So I think we can get Delp in as tight end two or tight end three. Get the mullet back for Tate, and they'll be humming.
I like it.
Work for the Eagles, all Georgia.
Hey,
nothing wrong with that. We appreciate you all for tuning in as always. Hit the like button on the stream, kind of helps push us out in the algorithm. We appreciate you guys. We'll be live next week to kind of, we're getting into the nitty gritty now. Free agency's coming up, a lot of things to kind of get to. But until then, we will catch you all. Peace.